Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner, and I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now. And it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. In this episode of Tech Intersect, I chat with Robert Greenfield IV. He's the president and CEO of Emerging Impact, a benefit corporation that supports major NGOs and government agencies leveraging emerging technology in humanitarian aid and welfare programming. And over the years, he has guest lectured on using blockchain technology in emerging economies at UC Berkeley, Harvard University, the University of Michigan, Morgan State, and Durham University. And he's done talks at the national and international levels, including at South by Southwest, SOCAP, and Ethereal, among many other major blockchain and social impact conferences. Robbie's a really good friend, and I met him back at Ethereal a few years back, and I've been really impressed with the work that he's done. His experience goes back to 2011, prior to developing Emerging Impact. Robbie founded Consensus Social Impact, the social and public sector practice of the world's leading blockchain venture studio, and served as the firm's head of social impact. He also co-founded the Blockchain for Social Impact Coalition, has over 8 years of software engineering, product management, and programming development experience, and has worked directly with the likes of the U.S. State Department, the World Bank, and Oxfam International, and many more. And Robbie has also co-led some of the world's highest profile blockchain for social impact projects and has authored and contributed to dozens of articles with outlets like CoinDesk, PC Magazine, Forbes, and Wired. Now, I invited him on today to explore what it means to leverage blockchain's distributed ledger technology and cryptocurrencies to modernize financial services in emerging markets, and also the needs of emerging markets and how the crypto industry might actually replicate the ills of the current system if it's not intentional about empowering rather than exploiting. We also talk about why crypto use is booming in countries like Nigeria, despite regulatory bans, and the mindset shift required to create generational wealth for marginalized communities in particular, not only as investors, but also as creators. Now, before we jump into the episode, I have an exciting announcement to make about an upcoming fall course that is back by popular demand. The 3-day online cohort experience, Decode the Future, Demystifying Crypto, DeFi, and NFTs, received such overwhelmingly positive feedback from the inaugural cohort that I've decided to offer it again in October. So I've set the dates for the weekend of October 1st through 3rd, in 2021. And participation includes 3 live sessions and 90 days of all access to the multi-lesson modules and the monthly live Q&A sessions and the replays to continue to support your journey. So if you're crypto curious or you own a little and now you're like, now what? You want to learn in a safe, welcoming, supportive environment with like-minded folks guided by an expert, and you're ready to win in the new digital economy, definitely join me. I've done the hard work so you don't have to, so let's grow. Learn more at AdvantageEvans.com. Learn all about your opportunities to pre-enroll at a significant discount before the prices go up in open enrollment. All right, let's get ready for the episode. Please take a moment to follow this podcast and then like, share, and comment so that others who would benefit from this content can find it. It's time to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. Today, I am so incredibly happy to have this Tech Intersect conversation with one of my crypto partners in power, Robbie Greenfield IV. He is former head of social impact at Consensus, co-founder of Ethereum for Impact and Unblocked Cash. I'll ask him about that in a moment. And also the hashtag Crypto for Black Lives and advisor to Sempo. And he's also a member of the esteemed First Family, a distinguished member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Ski-Fi, my brother.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with 1906 or 1908, but I digress. We'll talk about all of that in a moment. But first, Robbie, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. I'm honored to participate. So I appreciate you.
Outstanding. So I remember when we had so many one degree of separations between us when we first met. You were a bright and shining star in the midst of a sea of folks I did not know. I think it was like at may have been at a Consensus or an Ethereal or something. Yeah. I feel like it's Ethereal. Yeah. Ethereal, there we go. And we had a chance to chat then and put the face to the name. And before even meeting you in person, the impact of the work that you were doing and just your energy and your spirit and your focus was already clear. But I don't even really like most people. And I adored you from the minute. And we've been rocking ever since. And so it is a particular thrill to be able to connect with you now, some years behind us since that moment, and to see that we're both still doing the work, you in particular, because you are the focus today. So thank you for what you're doing.
No, thank you. And right back at you. I mean, obviously that. I mean, even back then, there were even fewer people of color in the space, you know, and it was still really, really niche. And, you know, come, you know, 2021, it seems like, you know, the whole world is opening up to these things. I definitely appreciate you riding through that experience with you. And I'm looking forward to what's going to happen in the future, for sure.
Absolutely. So for those who aren't familiar with you and the work that you do, give us your journey to this moment in time and what brought you to the crypto yard.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into some of the work that you're doing now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm Southern bred from Atlanta, and I actually got into the blockchain space, cryptocurrency blockchain space in 2011 when I started a Bitcoin day trading kind of group with a few other varsity athletes at University of Michigan, a few track athletes at the time. And I really was that person. Ironically, my boy Kennard, so shout out to Kennard and Bitbox, he got me into it, and I gave him a lot of stuff about it. I was like, this is weird. I don't understand this. And somehow he got me from saying things like that to investing my rent.
Exactly.
My care package money into Bitcoin. I think it was like $40. And then, you know, really continued to focus on, you know, what was happening in the community, did a little bit of Bitcoin scripting. And because I had an engineering background, started to focus on Ethereum when they made it possible to make decentralized applications a lot more simply than what you could do with Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But what really made me focus on leveraging, you know, emerging technologies for good was the murder of Trayvon Martin.
Mm.
At the University of Michigan, you know, this is a time that predated the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement, right? So at the time you started to see, at Michigan, it was hashtag BBUM, or being Black at the University of Michigan, which then triggered hashtag I am to Harvard. So these are kind of micro hashtag activism movements that caused a lot of protests on, you know, the campuses of America, led primarily by, you know, the Black student unions, the Greek, you know, organizations,
right,
you know, et cetera. And so at that point, it was like, okay, what can I do, you know, and how can I use my technical background for good, not only just for marginalized communities in the United States, but just across the African diaspora.
And right.
So that kind of burning passion, you know, was the backlight, you know, for my time at Goldman Sachs and then my time at Cisco Systems. And then I finally found, you know, a purpose-built opportunity at Consensus where they had the opportunity to create their social and public sector verticals, be it Consensus Social Impact and the Blockchain for Social Impact Coalition with Vanessa Grelle and Ben and, you know, and Ariana and all them. And, you know, through that experience, we just deployed, you know, dApps or decentralized applications, I think across 13 different projects across 17 different countries, worked with UN agencies, major NGOs, and that was really the inroad to what I'm doing now as CEO of Emerging Impact, which is building a platform that allows people to create blockchain-based financial applications really easily without having any type of blockchain knowledge and being able to deploy in hard-to-reach locales. So that's kind of the whole journey. And there's a little bit of Alpha Phi in there. There's a little bit of
Cisco.
You know, hard nights in between, of course, meeting amazing people like yourself as well.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
That's outstanding. And I love that your work is focused not only on, certainly as a matter of education for crypto assets and the decentralized finance space, but also empowering people to build, participate on the build side, even if you're not full-time coder, to really transform wealth, not just the crypto in a wallet or being an investor, or, and certainly as a matter of just consuming, but also building, being a part of building on top of the infrastructure, building vibrant decentralized applications and therefore businesses that are going to transform not only lives for this specific generation, but generations to come. That's the real power when you think about the future of wealth. And I know that the work that you're doing is really focused on some of the more pressing economic concerns throughout the diaspora and how you're positioning emerging impact to meet those needs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and it really starts, I mean, all the way back with the DevCon Scholars Program. I think it was 2019 now, which is it's crazy how time has passed. Like, I find it incredibly important to, because there's this, and it is somewhat of a racist assumption that, you know, people in, you know, what is called emerging markets of the global South just have an inability to create. And oftentimes it's due to a lack of resources. And when you see engineering candidates or, you know, people who want to study law or, you know, all these different people, these different interests, designers, especially through, you know, the program that we did with the Ethereum Foundation for DevCon 5, you see these people in person from the Afghanistans, Ugandas, you know, Ghana, Syria, you know, and they're incredibly bright, right? As they should be, right? You know, that's, you know, all the talent in the world is not in the West. But then you also realize that despite such creativity, despite such genius, their inability to build has to do with an inability of having platforms to build upon.
Right.
And so when you look at the Stripes and the Plaids and the Circles, all great platforms that operate really, really well in the United States, really, really well in Europe, they don't provide any coverage in these places. And so, you know, you see a cascading effect, not only in terms of the GDP of that nation, in terms of the startups that come out of that country, but also you see financial tools that are somewhat lacking in terms of the level of inclusivity. So I think you have to work on both sides, you know, both community building to bring people in, and that includes other Black founders. I mean, you're a fellow Black founder, you know, helping avoid the mistakes that you made so that they can accelerate more quickly. But then also, you know, in and of yourself, you need to, you know, steer your own ship and hopefully try to create a product, a platform that brings value to others and really kind of, you know, contribute to this growing ecosystem. So I think both are incredibly important.
Yeah, that really important points. And it makes me think of the journey that you are taking emerging, you and your team, and tell us more about your team as well. Emerging Impact, beginning as a blockchain advisory firm, spinning out of Consensus Social Impact, focused on empowering NGOs, modernizing financial services in emerging markets. And now the vision and focus, in addition, or maybe an expansion of, and you say it in your own words, of this focus on open banking for emerging markets with this, with your product called Emoja as well. So give us an idea of the journey of EI, and also happily full transparency being an advisor in the space. Yeah. I just have loved to see the evolution and to just hold on to the vision.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's crazy too, because we did a lot of great things, you know, through Consensus Social Impact. But the one I think, strain, you know, within the mesh, within consensus was, is that, you know, these aren't, you know, high, you know, revenue opportunities when you work with NGOs, relatively high touch in comparison to like enterprise DeFi, when you think about tokenized mm-hmm. securities and, you know, different derivatives and developing protocols, which I definitely think, you know, is certainly true in contrast to like the market size of each. But one thing that we kind of uncovered as we spun out into Emerging Impact is that there is a through line between what aid organizations do, right? Aid organizations support over 1 billion people a year, you know, through humanitarian mm-hmm. aid and other programs, and really are kind of tasked, you know, as saviors for the world, right? You're going to fix all the problems right. that the governments and that, you know, normal people just aren't going to fix. And so that through line is that here you have massive organizations that have global reach and, you know, have locations nearly in every country on the planet. And they interact with some of the most, you know, under-resourced communities in the world. Mm-hmm. Only they could, you know, provide, you know, those individuals, those communities, reusable tools. You have actually, you know, a huge opportunity to transform social protection programs. COVID stimulus, which is one of them, right? EBT,
right,
or, you know, colloquially known as food stamps, is another one. Social Security, right? People don't realize that social protection expands far beyond just humanitarian aid. So, you know, all of these programs, how you can actually leverage them rather to maintain a very low, you know, level of quality of life, and you can actually use it as an on-ramp to inclusive digital financial services. But yeah, it's all mm-hmm. the tools that you provide those individuals. So, you know, if our example with NGOs was, okay, how can we move them away from using paper vouchers and email and email, right? How can we just modernize that so that, okay, now they're giving people digital wallets that they can actually use on a feature phone or an NFC card that they can tap against, you know, a phone, right? Something that's just one iteration better, more transparent. And then beyond that, okay, how can we provide those people that now have these digital wallets, they've increased their digital literacy now using our products, how can we get them to access DeFi-based savings or DeFi-based loans, right? And then right. beyond that, you know, index investing on like synthetic assets, right? Something far, far into the future. So, you know, Emerging Impact, we started, you know, in an advisory capacity, as you said, with these NGOs, you know, building trust with, you know, Oxfam Pacific, now mm-hmm. CARE, which we have an upcoming pilot with, Hope for Haiti, which we're doing a pilot in Haiti. And then after deploying those humanitarian aid programs, going even further and saying, okay, now you can use this as a tool to manage your point of sale as a merchant, right? So that's a tool that
right.
you can have. Now you can access insurance, you know, by being in a network of merchants that all use the same application. So you're able to do things that they were never able to access, and you're providing more and more financial security and better income opportunities that actually accelerate them in terms of their, you know, overall social mobility and access. And so Moja, right, is the product suite that allows us to do all the things that, you know, that I'm describing, that allows us to have feature phone, you know, based digital wallets for merchants, you know, that are really, really small, you know, street vendors, right, in areas mm-hmm. that are really under-supported. And then beyond that, an API that anyone can use, right, to build their own wallets, to build their own financial services, and know that there's actually an off-ramp for those people to use that digital currency, whether it be USDC or whichever, or DAI, to actually right. buy things in their locale. Because without that, you know, level of pragmatism, you can't do anything, right? It's just an
investment right.
tool. And so that's what we're really trying to build, is really empower aid agencies and fintechs to more easily develop inclusive financial tools in the hardest reach markets, you know, in the world. And I'll end by saying, people always obsess over the social sector, you know, aiming at these, you know, lower socioeconomic consumers, you know, isn't something that a sustainable business can focus on. But they forget 86% of the world live in emerging markets, live across the global
South. Right.
Right. That's the vast majority of people. So what we're doing in the West is actually what's niche. It's
right.
the world that needs access to these things.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step-by-step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
We hope you're enjoying this edition of Tech Intersect. Our conversation will continue in a moment, but first, a word on an exciting opportunity.
There's a more cost-effective and time-efficient way to reach your leading-edge learning and earning goals, to put you ahead of the stiff competition in this fast-paced, tech-driven economy. You need skills, credentials, and a fast track to a competitive advantage. You need it now more than ever, and I can help. The Advantage Evans Method puts you ahead of the curve with condensed, comprehensive online courses, curated content to leverage your current skills and expertise, live coaching, networking opportunities, and more. Upcoming courses include From Cash to Crypto to help you buy your first Bitcoin, and there are two ways to get your advantage. Advantage Evans Encore gives you maximum experience for your total competitive advantage and access for 1 year. It includes a live welcome and modules on terminology, buying and selling, exchanges, mining, earning crypto, trading and investing, and also several of the legal issues you need to know in order to be safe and secure as you enter this space. That includes tax compliance, how to plan for a Bitcoin estate, and securities laws to make sure you avoid any legal unforced errors. Now, Advantage Core gives you the essentials. It's a short course to give you what you want and the support you need to buy your first crypto in as little as 3 weeks, with access to the information and replays for 3 months. And if you're not quite ready for your Advantage and want a sneak peek to try before you buy, then register for a free masterclass where I share my Crypto 101 success checklist and cover current hot topics in crypto. So there truly is something for everyone, including you, to get in on the fast track and learn and earn in the digital economy. Visit AdvantageEvans.com to get started. That's AdvantageEvans.com.
And now, back to the conversation.
It's a powerful point and one that needs to be emphasized over and over and over again. I think this myopic view within the borders of the United States is doing a grave disservice to how we transact business. First of all, how we're all connected.
Yeah.
I think, and this is not a political statement, but the inability to coalesce around facts, prevalence of misinformation and disinformation in a range of areas from politics to health to education allows people to otherize more than this nation is already otherizing. I mean, the foundation of this nation is built on this idea of otheredness that is allowed to propagate when you have mis and disinformation, and this idea of being disconnected in an otherwise globally connected world, which always was the case, you know, when you think of the physical landmass, and now we're talking about Web 3.0 solutions in a decentralized fashion and necessarily having to build technology that reflects and supports that. So that means that, you know, if we're traveling and having to go from dollars to the local currency, or if you're in emerging markets where there's a destabilized economic system and or government, when you go to local levels and local communities where there tends to be the localized government that doesn't support a top-down look of, I mean, we're seeing what's going on in Afghanistan and all. You can stay there 20 years or 2,000 years. Yeah. Culture is what it is. And if governance is localized, that makes for a very pressing problem when you're trying to construct this idea of a top-down where it doesn't work culturally. Yeah. And money is the tie that binds your ability to be able to transact value, regardless of where you are, is even more important now. And so when you think, final point, of a global, the idea of a global reserve that is currently the United States dollar, I think when we come back in a short period of time, we won't be having that same conversation because of the impact of crypto, and what are your thoughts about that?
You're absolutely right. And I think this is, especially in the context of Afghanistan, I would say that that's just normal colonialism, but
right. Fair point.
In crypto, you know, it's, you know, just because of how long that the whole thing has last. But I would say more broadly to your point, like, there is an air of neo-colonialism in how blockchain products and crypto-based products are evangelized around the world. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, which startups get, you know, resources sooner. And we've talked about that before, you know, we all know, and it's no secret in the crypto world that, you know, Black and Brown founders are not typically given the capability of presenting a venture capital firm a white paper and raising $10 million.
Right.
And that is the reality on the other side. It just absolutely is, bar none. And that's how a lot of these entities, you know, a lot of these protocols that we know are at name brands today, that's how they initially got started. Or it's proximity to money, right? So being, you know, very close to, you know, a Joe Lubin or a Vitalik or a Tim Draper, right, that can afford you the opportunity to test things out that other founders, you know, from more disparate backgrounds wouldn't be able to test out. So that's, I think, one, you know, aspect of kind of, you know, what's happening here. But, you know, more broadly, I think that there's also a blockchain knowledge gap in what we would call emerging markets, because a lot of the documentation to develop these things, you know, hasn't been translated. Right. So, you know, if we look at the Ethereum Foundation, they only started their translations efforts a year and a half ago. Right. It was toward the back end of 2019 when they started doing this, going into 2020. And a lot of the DevCon scholars from the program that I earlier mentioned, like, helped in that translation, especially with Arabic and others. So those two issues, you know, translating, you know, resources so they can actually be leveraged at all. You know, providing, you know, money, you know, to start that have promising ideas, and, you know, allowing them to create some of those culturally relevant solutions is going to be really important. And then the last, you know, the last thing I would say is that, like, this, and of course we could spend a whole hour on this, is that for people, you know, of color, you know, or from people from marginalized backgrounds or people from different countries that are typically underrepresented in the West, when they do break in and they do get the job or they do get the opportunity, typically they are measured on a sliding scale of meritocracy, right? Which we know, especially in the crypto space, which is incredibly narcissistic, like we know that meritocracy is just not a thing. It's not a thing.
Right.
And so now, you know, they've gotten the resources, but now they have to deal with the mental health element of just wanting to stay in the space at all, because, you know, they see how, you know, promotions are doled out or work is not acknowledged. And so there's a lot of barriers, you know, that cause situations in which you have expat technologies being used in somebody else's country in a way that's probably not as efficient as if a local resident had created a similar solution.
Absolutely. It makes me think of some of the reports now focused on the continent of Africa and certain countries that are citizens are a bit ahead of the curve than really the rest of the world. When you think about mass adoption, we've always been talking about mass adoption and what that might look like. And so I've been fascinated by what's going on in Nigeria and wondering your thoughts. CoinDesk did a report, or reported, I should say, in July of 2021, and some other outlets picked it up as well, explaining why crypto is booming in Nigeria despite the banking ban on crypto. I'm wondering your thoughts there and just adoption on the continent in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did some really interesting research with MetaMask, and it was a Global South report on MetaMask users in Nigeria, in Colombia, in the Philippines, in Brazil. So all around the world, right? And the premise was exactly that. Like, how are, you know, Global South consumers using crypto generally, right? What are their issues? What are the use cases? And to your point, you know, why, when you see unfavorable, like, policy changes in some of these countries, does that usage persist? And what we found in, you know, in Nigeria specifically, that a lot of crypto literate users that did have access to smartphones, obviously these are not the average residents, right? You know, these are not the average Nigerians. The vast majority of Nigerians do not have access to these things. But for the ones they do, they used it as a tool to build wealth and a tool to smooth income. And so you saw a lot of, you know, a lot of hodling, right?
Right.
Using cryptocurrency as impromptu savings. But then you also saw that there's still a lot of issues with in having to go two or three applications over to off-ramp.
Right.
And so there are a lot of informal economies developing in countries like Nigeria to smooth over off and on-ramp issues just as much as there are company fintech companies coming out of those regions based off of traditional fintech. And so, I mean, I think, and then in places like the Philippines, it was even more exaggerated in terms of a very particular focus on savings itself and not as much investment.
Yes. Yes.
So I mean, these insights, I think, you know, make it very clear that what the average Global South consumer is looking for is a pragmatic use of cryptocurrency as a store of value, as an investment tool that can be reliably used, rather than what we're seeing in the West, which is a whole bunch of people with expendable income investing right, and buying digital collectibles. And that's not to say
right.
those elements of the ecosystem are anything to laugh at. They certainly are really, really interesting. And I think you'll start to see similar behaviors around the world, but it's not use one, right? It's
right.
Eight. But unfortunately, there aren't a lot of resources built in the West that can be portable in these other regions in terms of building, you know, those type of solutions.
So I can imagine that is the reason that partnerships like your recent partnership with companies like Celo are really important. For those who are not familiar, Celo is a mobile first platform that makes financial dApps, decentralized applications, and crypto payments accessible to anyone with a mobile phone. And so that type of strategic partnership seems to be advancing the ball even more for the very reasons that you just mentioned.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the whole Celo ecosystem, the Celo Foundation, Seed Labs, Valora have all been amazing partners. And effectively what we're doing with them is really transforming, you know, the Celo blockchain as the most socially impactful, you know, ecosystem on the planet. I can attest that they are very dedicated and spend a great deal of grant funds toward realizing, you know, use cases like micro work, like exposing people to safe DeFi savings, exposing, you know, NGOs to digital humanitarian aid, which obviously Emerging Impact and our team has been a pioneer in even since Consensus days, you know, allowing all those things to happen on their platform. And so with them, we actually have three major pilots coming up. One that's already been announced with CARE International, which is one of the biggest NGOs in the world. And that's going to be in Ecuador.
Right.
And then another in Haiti with an organization for Haiti, which this was planned before the recent presidential assassination and also the recent earthquake in Sud. And so it really shows you how in times of crisis, especially with what Haiti is going through, how you literally cannot get aid on the ground in those circumstances, right?
Right.
The flight paths are blocked off. You can't send non-fungible goods because of the level of security increase, you know, given the recent assassination. And it also shows you that despite what we see in terms of these, you know, smartphone penetration statistics, what a smartphone is on the ground in a place where there's high need is not an iPhone. It's not the latest Android. It's like the first version, right, of a
smartphone
that doesn't have NFC, that can't scan QR codes. And so it also redefines, okay, what does a digital wallet mean when it comes to the average person on the planet? And that is not representative in the United States, and it's not representative in the EU. It's in places like these that are a better representation of who the average person is and what their needs are when it comes to these technologies.
So it's the idea of, I had an interview on Tech Intersect early on with Andreas Antonopoulos about the other 6 billion. There are a few other people on the planet that we need to solve and strategize for. And that's a whole other episode that maybe we could come back and do as well. A final thing I want to ask you about, because all of this is well and good, all of this planning, all of the strategizing, all of the assistance, support, and the vision are essential.
Yeah.
But the most fundamental thing that I think also needs to happen, separate and apart from education, you can't even get to education, quite frankly, without a mindset shift about what generational wealth looks like, what the future of wealth and work look like, particularly for historically marginalized communities throughout the diaspora. Talk to me about the mindset shift that has to change if we're really going to be about the business of building generational wealth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's two mindset changes that need to occur on both sides of the solutions that are being made. On the user side, on the consumer side, and this is both a mindset change, but also needed support that communities need, right? One is changing from a cash, you know, mentality. A lot of communities across the African diaspora around the world are cash-based communities, right?
Right.
And a huge part of transitioning to something digital from cash is that you have to be sure of yourself that you actually can access your money at any time.
Right.
Right. You know, leaving your money unattended to in a remote area is a foreign concept. Mm. And we've seen that go badly in foreign places like the United States quite often. And so that's the first thing. And the thing that they need support on, and I think the things that solutions need to design around, is helping improve and incentivize increase in digital literacy and helping improve and incentivize an increase in financial literacy for that particular product, right? So don't make any assumptions. Take all the barriers of technical literacy down. Don't try to get people to memorize 12-word seeds or put in ticker symbols of the stablecoin. Just put what the local fiat equivalent is, right? Like a lot of those design obstacles need to be taken down so that these individuals have a very easy entryway to what this new experience is going to be for them. And then, of course, making sure that it actually works, you know, in that locale as well, right?
Right.
And then I think on the builder side, particularly for Black and Brown, you know, entrepreneurs, is we have to not only build, you know, the solution for that particular use case, but we need to think about like platform building.
Right.
Because the value now is in development of platforms and protocols. It's not necessarily in the development of applications. And so, you know, I would say what could help this mind shift for individuals who are like, well, I don't even know where to start. Like I want to have this impact. I don't know where to start. And I have an idea of some application-based problems that I can attend to in my community. One excellent way is to read the white papers of platforms that already exist. You know, one thing that I think is somewhat of a lie, you know, in the blockchain space is that, you know, white creativity is the end all be all as to what moves the space forward. But if you actually look at a lot of these projects, they're clones of other projects, right? There are very few individuals in the space. I mean, obviously Vitalik being one of them, that really insert new ideas, you know, that are core to other things working. And so looking at the Uniswaps, the Aaves, the Compounds, and beyond, reading those white papers, not understanding all of it. And you don't have to understand all the math, but what you'll see, you'll see certain patterns. It's like, oh, okay, they're using this for this. Oh, okay, they're using this to make this more secure. And then when you create those, you know, and then you also realize, okay, this is what doesn't work in a Nigeria or a Philippines or a Colombia, and or in an areas that have Sharia law, which, you know, change how you can move finances around and for which reasons.
Right.
And so when you identify those patterns, you understand your current constraints culturally. Now you're in a perfect place to take those building blocks, you know, like Legos, put them together and make them fit within that cultural context. And now you have a plan, and now you're in a much better place than you were before. So I think it has to happen on both sides. And I would say, you know, outside of that, I think investors need to be a bit more pragmatic and a bit more objective as to how they assess opportunities, right? You can't make investments on the fly for one person for $1 million because of a white paper and not do it for another. And I've seen a lot of rationalization within the investor community, even from Black investors, you know, to be frank, that do that. That just eliminates the opportunity, you know, altogether.
I believe in this mindset shift. I believe very strongly in the future of work and wealth. I believe very strongly in you and certainly Emerging Impact. And I look forward to seeing all of the, you know, and this is no pun intended, the impact that you are making and you and your team, because you've had this vision for a long time. And I just think that you're so well positioned to do so. And so I'm really excited about the future for those who want to learn more about Emerging Impact, how they can get involved, about you and your work. Let them know where they can find you. I will also include that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, one, right back at you. You know, you got everyone has to support each other to get where we want to be. It's not a single man or woman's journey. So I really do appreciate you and all the support that you've given us over the past few years, which is crazy that years have gone by now.
I know.
In terms of, you know, reaching out to Emerging Impact, you can always reach out to us on emergingimpact.com. Also, email is team@emergingimpact.com. Always looking for new partners. And always looking to help support, you know, others in this journey. And our goal is to really just simplify the ability to build, you know, wealth generating tools for 86% of the world who don't have as much access as the West does. And so if your mission aligns with that, whether you're an NGO or a fintech or whichever, certainly reach out and let's build together.
Robbie Greenfield, thank you. And the work continues.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so, so much, Robbie, for sharing all of that wisdom. I'm really, really encouraged about the opportunities that await if we build the infrastructure and include the necessary participants today. Folks, we are at an inflection point. We could replicate the discriminatory and exclusionary realities of the current traditional finance system, or we can leverage decentralization to level the digital economy playing field. Companies like Emerging Impact and activist entrepreneurs like Robbie Greenfield are working tirelessly to ensure that the digital future presents far more actual, sustainable, generational wealth opportunities than the discriminatory analog past. Now, if your values and vision align with that mission, be sure to reach out to the good folks at Emerging Impact. The future is now, it's bright, and change begins with you. Okay, before we sign off, please take a moment to like, comment, and share this episode and this podcast with your networks. Follow me on social media and let me know what topics you'd like to hear more of and who you want to hear from. That's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.
Stay in touch with host Tanya Evans via your favorite social media, on Twitter at @TechIntersect and on Instagram via the handle @TechIntersect. This podcast has been produced by Stephanie Renee for Soul Sanctuary Incorporated.